Welcome to Health Yeah, where experts from Stony Brook Medicine come together to discuss topics ranging from the complex inner workings of an infectious disease to tips and tricks for staying safe and healthy all year long.
Hi, my name is Sharon Nachman. I'm the Division Chief for Pediatric Infectious Disease at Stony Brook Children's. Today, we're going to be talking about monkeypox, although we prefer to call it mpox because that's its correct name. Mpox has been around for just a few years here on Long Island in the U.S., and today, two of my colleagues and I will be discussing it, Eric and Susan. Eric, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Dr. Eric Lella. I'm the family medicine physician and medical director at the E.D. Windsor Healthcare Center. So we do comprehensive LGBTQ plus healthcare here in Hampton Bays.
Susan.
Hi, I'm Susan Dallin. I'm an infectious diseases physician by training. I'm the medical director for infection prevention and control and the health systems epidemiologist for Stony Brook Medicine.
I guess the first question we need to think about is what's leading to this mpox outbreak? Susan, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'd like to speak to the beginning of the mpox. Mpox is found in nature, in animals in Central and West Africa, and transmission occurs sporadically when humans interact with infected animals. And sometimes the infection goes broader, but usually does not leave the country or the surrounding countries. However, things changed in 2022. Eric?
Yeah, at the early summer of 2022, we started to see cases, human-to-human transmission, which was pretty significantly and obviously linked to sexual contact. We did see it far more prevalent in the MSM or men who have sex with men community. And that's probably related to just the number of partners that individuals in the MSM community have, typically more partners than individuals in the heterosexual community.
And I think the international travel really helped expand it beyond its usual spots into Europe and the Americas.
You know, I'm reminded that mpox is a virus like so many other viruses. It gets on planes and travels with the people. So it's not surprising that we're seeing mpox in the U.S. and even here on Long Island, because like other places, our families get on planes and travel and bring viruses back with them. But I guess really we need to think about that outbreak control. You know, if you're worried about it, how would you think about keeping your home clean, your household clean, thinking about yourself? What are the things you should be doing? Susan, maybe you want to help us with that.
Well, I think in terms of prevention of transmission from person to person, you want to avoid skin-to-skin contact with anyone that has lesions that may be at risk. And I think it's important for people to understand that while MSM has been a significant driver of the cases across the globe, this is an infection that's transmitted by intimacy and proximity. So, in fact, we have had people who have created the opportunity, unfortunately, to be infecting others in their household. There have been pregnant women that have given birth to infants that have been infected. And so it's more of an intimacy and proximity, not underscore what Eric said. I think it's important to make sure that you know who your partners are and wash your hands often. And avoid contact with any materials that may have mpox liquid or fluids or scabs on them.
It sounds like pretty much a lot of the other viruses that we talk about all the time here on Long Island. That close proximity to someone who's infected is something you should think about. We certainly think about families that have children that sleep in the same bed as them. That's certainly another risk. So thinking someone has mpox purely from a sexual contact, probably not true, although it's true a lot of the times, as you said, Eric. There are certainly situations where it may not be true. But more importantly, what are the kind of things that we have to think about with signs and symptoms? We get families calling us all the time. They're worried. What should you tell them to look for?
Well, the initial signs and symptoms will probably start with a small lesion that then progresses to something that looks like a tiny blister. We call it a vesicle. And then that'll develop into something that, I mean, you know, now with, you know, the bulk of our children getting vaccinated for chickenpox, we don't really see it that often. But for those of us who remember chickenpox, it's going to look something like that. It's going to be a small lesion, smaller than an eraser of a pencil, or about the same size, and it goes through different stages. So it'll eventually erupt over, break over, and scab, much like any other scab that we see on the body. That's when a patient's going to be the most infectious, and that's really where we want to avoid contact with that other individual, because those scabs and any of the fluids coming from those lesions are they're terribly high in viral load, and that's how someone can be infected.
You know, Sharon, speaking of chickenpox, I think it's important for people to understand there's a significant difference between the scabs of chickenpox and the scabs of mpox. Mpox is more like smallpox insofar as the scabs themselves contain infectious material. So if the when someone is doing laundry, they shouldn't be shaking out their linen or shaking out their clothing. They want to contain that. They need to do their laundry separately. But also, if someone scratches the scab off before it falls off naturally, then the denuded skin that's underneath that wasn't quite ready to let go of that scab, also contains infectious material. And so I've actually met a couple of people that thought that the faster they could get the scabs off of their body, the faster they would heal. They need about 1 to 2 weeks for the scabs to fall off naturally. It may be longer for patients that are immune compromised in some manner, but I think the most important thing is that people understand that the scabs themselves aren't still infectious, and that can impact a family and how people interact with each other.
Yeah, that kind of leads into another good point of, we've discussed vaccinations for prevention, and what we can do to protect other people in the home. But, we also have to give credit to the community where we saw the outbreak primarily in the United States, which is the MSM community. There was actually a study done, in the early months in the summer of 2022. And just with public health outreach, just getting the word out, having people talk to each other. I can remember there was a massive discussion on social media and Instagram. People just sharing information with others because, people needed answers and they couldn't really get them from their primary care provider who,
may not know.
A lot of them didn't know. Just having those conversations, that study that I just mentioned showed that in the community where we saw the most cases, the MSM community, there was a 50% reduction in individuals having a new sexual partner. They had a 50% reduction in having multiple sexual partners, and also a 50% reduction in individuals finding new sexual partners through dating apps or certain venues and parties and whatnot. So, the community deserves some credit there for just changing their behaviors before everyone could get vaccinated. That's what really helped us kind of flatten the curve, so to say.
Right. And again, it points out that talking with an educated provider and that education about what's real, what are facts, and what's perhaps fiction is very important for this disease, as well as pretty much all of the diseases we see here at Stony Brook, as well as on Long Island in New York. Education is key. And if your provider doesn't know, that's okay. Ask them to find out or talk to someone else who does know what's going on. And I want to say the CDC website is actually quite good. It's available in English and Spanish. And it actually has very readable materials about not only mpox, but other illnesses as well. And oftentimes, I'll send families to the CDC website and say, here are the facts. This isn't what's going to affect your child, your family, because these are truth and not just hearsay. And mpox is a perfect example of that, how the CDC and other health providers actually use the community, and the community use them appropriately to get that messaging out. And that, I believe, did save a lot of new cases here on Long Island. We're actually lucky. In the old days, we'd have families describe to us what they're seeing. But now, everyone has a phone, and all those phones have cameras. So what I tell families, when you have a rash, take a picture today, tomorrow, and the next day at the same time of each day. So not only can you see what's going on, but when you bring those pictures to me, I can see also. What are the other things you tell families, though?
So With Mpox viruses, there's something called a prodrome that we see. So prodrome is it's a group of symptoms that occur before we see the typical signs of an infection. So this would be like flu-like symptoms, so fevers, chills, body aches, basically flu-like symptoms. Although with the Mpox outbreak that happened in the United States in 2022, the Clade 2B outbreak, we didn't see as much of the prodrome. It was the lesions that appeared first. The lesions can be very painful.
Right.
Definitely saw at the beginning of the outbreak in the United States that the lesions were extremely painful for patients, and they were in very sensitive areas. I can speak more to that in a moment about some of the transmission there, but that led to people with extremely painful lesions in their mucosal tissue, so the back of the throat, their genitals, and their anus. So that made things very uncomfortable. As people started getting vaccinated, I think the lesions that at least some of the cases that I saw were less painful. They can also be itchy.
Right, and we'll talk a little bit about the vaccine in a few minutes and how that may have changed things. But you're right, that painful lesions are certainly different than we've seen with other rashes in adults and children. While they're itchy and they complain, they're a little bit different because the Mpox blisters or lumps and bumps were very, very painful. But I wanted to sort of ask Susan a little bit more about the CDC data. Tell me what you've been hearing.
In terms of the CDC data and also another website, Our World in Data, I think that they've seen that the presentations, as you allude to, are a bit milder in patients that have completed their second dose of vaccine. I think it's important for people to understand that two doses are best, right, and no vaccine is 100% effective, but it can mitigate the impact of the lesions and the pain and the morbidity that goes along with an Mpox infection.
So maybe let's talk about the vaccine for a few minutes since you both mentioned it. Where did this vaccine come from? It's surprising to me we have an Mpox vaccine when it's, I want to say, a relatively new disease here. Where did the vaccine come from? Susan, you want to take a hit on that?
Well, the world has stockpiled smallpox vaccines for years, and Mpox and smallpox, in fact, are related. And by utilizing some and modifying some vaccine that was already created for smallpox, which is no longer seen in its natural state in this world, we were able to utilize that as a jumping-off point for at least the beginning of the global outbreak.
So, Eric, when you're giving patients this vaccine, what are the kind of things you tell them about? Do you tell them they're going to have a flu-like illness? Is it a live vaccine or a kill vaccine? What are the things you sort of screen for or report to families that are going to get the vaccine to think about?
Yeah, so the biggest side effect that I saw with the vaccines was the vaccines are administered. It's not like a typical COVID or flu shot where it goes into the muscle at your upper arm. It's subcutaneous, so we actually put it into the fat beneath the skin. So it's with a much smaller needle.
That's nice.
So, yeah. So I don't find that patients have as much arm soreness after the shot, but I've seen very commonly you can feel a little nodule underneath the skin there, maybe like a small grape. And that can be a little tender, but typically only if the patient pushes on it. And that can last several weeks. I've seen it gets smaller and smaller, but I've seen some patients who still experience that little nodule there going up to about 4 or 5 weeks. There was a short period of time where when we were kind of in the thick of it and there was a shortage of doses, there was an emergency use authorization for us to split the doses, use a smaller amount, and place it intradermally, so in between the layers of the skin, a slightly different approach with the needle. We don't have to do anymore because we have adequate number of vaccines going around. I think some patients were left with a little bit of darker pigmentation there that was a bit more long-lasting, but no one needs to worry about that now. I have had patients who got their first dose in that manner intradermally when we were kind of splitting those doses. And they asked me, well, does it matter? Do I need to get both doses now the way that it was originally intended? And the answer is no. We can give somebody their second dose the way that it's approved for subcutaneously, even if that first dose was given in the layers of the skin.
So, Susan, I'm sure you have patients that are asking for the vaccine now. What advice do you give them? Where should they get it?
Well, they can actually use the government vaccine locator where they can plug in what vaccine they're looking for and where they are and what vicinity they're willing to travel to get it. And then that would give them a list of places that they can contact to make sure that they have the vaccine. I think you give it at E.D. Windsor.
Yeah, at the E.D. Windsor Healthcare Center, we actually, starting at the beginning of the outbreak, we were one of the few locations on Long Island outside of Fire Island to offer the vaccine. We did a massive vaccination campaign. We were doing 3 days a week. We basically just had patients in and out the door every 5 to 10 minutes. We gave 1,163 doses in 2022. In 2023, we were able to give 66 doses. That was started in May of that year when we were able to get the vaccine direct from the CDC and able to keep giving it to patients without insurance. And then this year, we've given 88 doses to date. So definitely speak with your healthcare provider, your pharmacist, and utilize that CDC Mpox vaccine locator to help find that, because if you've only had one dose, we definitely want to get that second dose. Most of the breakthrough cases are occurring in individuals who are not vaccinated at all or who are under vaccinated with only one dose so far.
So we've talked a lot about prevention, but of course we have to also discuss treatment. And I know there are a lot of different treatments out there. Let's start with sort of the easy one. What's the one that's available now that patients can get? Susan, do you want to?
I'm going to defer that to Eric because he has probably treated more patients than I have.
So if we get a patient who's had exposure, which at the, in the summer of 2022, when certainly there was a lot more exposure going on, we were seeing more cases. This year, I think we see maybe one or two new cases in New York and on Long Island, maybe every other week. So the numbers have really gone down. But if somebody was exposed, the best thing to do is actually to get them the first dose of a vaccine. Even for, the very early days of the illness, we were still saying you get one dose of the vaccine, and that may shorten the duration and the severity of the infection. There are certain antiviral medications. One of them is called TPOXX. Perhaps you'd like to speak a little bit more about that one that can be utilized for patients who need that. And there's certainly special populations where we would absolutely want to be using that medication.
So the medication that you're calling TPOXX, so Tecovirimat, is an antiviral. And as we're all discussing, Mpox is a virus. So an antibiotic isn't going to make you better. It's going to be that specific antiviral, Tecovirimat. And until recently, there were two ways to get it. The first way was to go into a hospital, have them identify that you, in fact, did have Mpox, and get approval to get the Tecovirimat from the CDC. And that was quite successful. Several hundred people across the country have certainly gotten it, and that's adults as well as children. But recently, or actually not so recently, about a year and a half ago, the NIH approved a clinical trial to study the Tecovirimat, because the question was, is this actually the best drug to use? And the study was set up to compare it for those patients who were reasonably well to placebo, and for a group of patients who did have severe pain, as you've mentioned, because that severe pain really is something that we're not comfortable saying, oh, no treatment is fine. Those patients were getting unblinded Tecovirimat. And that study is almost completely enrolled. All the 600 patients are just about finished enrolling. And we're hoping to have a readout on that study in the spring of this year, because we need to understand, is the dose correct? Is the interval for how long you have to treat those patients correct? And is this the right drug? There are other drugs out there in the pipeline. One of them is called Brincidivir, and that is another drug we can use. But before we go there, we want to use the drug that perhaps has less toxicities, is available orally. So that study called STOMP is open. And more interestingly enough, this is one of the first times the NIH has approved a clinical trial that you can enroll on long distance. You don't have to go to a center to enroll. You could actually enroll from your own home with your computer. Who are you? Did you have a positive swab? If not, we'll send you a swab to swab yourself and send it to the lab. And you'll get the medication delivered to your house. And as long as you're answering all the questions on your computer, you can stay on study. And this is a novel approach. And it's really important because it tells us across the country, this is the best way to get medication to the people who need it, especially if they're not near a big center like Stony Brook that is participating in the study. But I think this tells us that we have a lot more to learn about Mpox. So I know that we have a lot of questions that people are wanting to know. They're on Google and they're looking up stuff. So I thought, let's go through some of these really quickly. So Susan, how's the best way to test for this virus?
Oh, the best way to test for this virus, whether it's within an emergency room and a physician is helping or at home, is to get to the base of one of the lesions with the swab that's provided and rub in the bottom of the lesion and then put it into the container. And then that will be sent to a reference lab that will allow you to find out if the lesion that you have is in fact Mpox.
And what's nice is that the reference labs that are available in Long Island, like LabCorp and Quest, are both testing for this virus. So there's no difficulty finding a lab that will test for it, unlike in the beginning of the outbreak where there were some difficulties. Now it can go to LabCorp and Quest with absolutely no problem. So, Eric, I get a lot of questions about scarring. Is it going to scar? Am I going to have scars for long from these blisters, from the, you know, what's going to happen with those patients?
Well, certainly the severity of the lesions, you know, linked to the severity of the overall illness. So, you know, somebody who's unvaccinated and has a very severe course of it, certainly those lesions can leave some scars. You know, it depends on, you know, the person's skin. Are they susceptible to other scars? You know, do they have a history of keloids? That was actually something that we had to consider when giving vaccinations. We didn't want to cause scarring in patients who, you know, had the propensity to scar. You know, I think we can kind of refer to general skin care that we would do after somebody has a, you know, a cut and gets sutures, pardon me. You know, we want to keep those areas of the skin, you know, moist. We don't want them to dry out. When skin dries out, that's when we get more scarring. You know, once those crusted, you know, lesions, you know, once that crust falls off and we have that nice, fresh, pink, new skin underneath, that's when the patient's no longer infectious. But that's also, you know, a good point in time where we want to make sure that we're protecting the skin. So UV protection, using a good mineral-based sunblock. You know, skin can take up to a year to fully heal before it's not going to be extra susceptible to things like UV rays. But there's other ways you can discuss with your primary care physician. Some people use silicone tape and gel if there's a potential mark somewhere that we want to make sure doesn't get to be too severe. But it can happen.
So, Susan, people always talk about if you have Mpox, oh my gosh, we have to lock you down, lock your house down. No one can go in and out. What are the common advice or common useful advice that you give to families?
Well, I think it's important that if they do have the ability to have their own bathroom and to kind of, you know, self-isolate without a lot of interaction with the families, that obviously brings down the temperature of anxiety within a household. If they're well enough to handle their own garbage, they're well enough to disinfect their own, you know, bathroom, their own area, they should do so each day. They should make sure that they don't share any towels or bedding or other utensils, for example, eating utensils that may, in fact, have some residual virus on them. I think that it can be a bit onerous, but I think that it is something that can be done at home. Making sure that you take great care, especially when you're acutely infected, wear a mask around others, and then make sure that your lesions are covered. If you have lesions on your hands, you should be wearing disposable gloves.
Right. I think it comes down to being smart and common sense. if you know that you're high risk and infectious, this is a good time for you to perhaps isolate in your room and not hang out with other people watching TV in the living room. Perhaps also not going to work. We certainly have recommended that adults that have Mpox that are in their acute phase stay home. And we're happy to even give them a note for work saying that they're infectious and the last thing they want to do is go to work and infect other people at work. You know, I remind families this is not just the common flu, oh, a few days and you'll get better. This is a serious infection. It is viral. It takes time to get better. And it's okay to take those extra steps to make sure that the people in the household don't get sick. Now, Eric, you had mentioned beforehand that there are some families or some patients that are higher risk, perhaps immune compromised. What kind of advice do you give to those?
Yeah, so certainly individuals who have, some chronic disease or illness that puts them in an immunocompromised state, that also includes being HIV positive. We do know that infections can be more likely, breakthrough infections can be more likely. You know, we tell patients, it's a vaccine, but much like, the COVID vaccine, it's not 100% effective. I tell patients, we do need to take other precautions, getting vaccinated, of course, wearing condoms and barrier protection. I joke with patients that, this isn't a condom for your whole body. You know, we need to protect ourselves if our partner is, potentially infectious. Just kind of a slight tangent. I think one of the reasons why we see it spreading so easily, or why we saw it spreading so easily in 2022, was, a sexual partner probably, was infected. They were about to show lesions, but we weren't seeing them just yet. So their skin is probably starting to shed some of that virus, but they don't know that they have a rash starting. So they have an intimate encounter with a new partner. That new partner now becomes infected. And then lo and behold, that initial person, the next day or a couple days from there, now they show a rash. So it's not just so much, checking over to make sure that your new partner doesn't have a current rash, making good decisions about your sexual partners, having an open conversation as we should always about our sexual health, but seeing if you can find a partner who's fully vaccinated. Maybe a partner who always uses condoms and barrier protection, or finding a partner who maybe hasn't just had many multiple sexual partners themselves, because that does increase your risk, all of those factors.
And I want to remind everyone that there are families behind each of these individuals, and it's not just keeping themselves safe, but also keeping their family safe. In the old days, we talked about chicken pox, and one kid would have chicken pox, go to school, infect their whole class, and 2 weeks and 2 weeks and 2 weeks, and the entire school had chicken pox. Clearly, the transmission was a little different in chicken pox from monkey pox, but the same things apply. This is a virus. It can spread in households. It can spread in offices, intimate, close contact, bed sharing, etc. So it's smart to be smart about yourself and smart to be smart about your family. Who else is in your family? Who else do you need to protect, not just yourself? And then think prospectively about preventing illness in everybody. Vaccination is not perfect, you're right, but it does work. Treatment also will be helpful, but only if we get you early enough into your course. If you're more than 9 days into your illness, the treatments are probably not going to be so effective. Are there other treatments down the line? Yes. Do you need 2 doses of vaccination? Absolutely. What was interesting is recently a paper came out that you can actually vaccinate adolescents under age 18 with this vaccine, and it will be as effective. So when we think about at-risk youth, those are also individuals who we can now think about preventing infection. So I think we're learning a lot about Mpox. I think we have a lot more to learn, perhaps better vaccines, better treatments, better identification, perhaps a rapid test in our future. And I think this is the good time to be talking about it because it's occurring on Long Island in New York. And we have to think about how are we going to all be safer and smarter about our health. So thank you very much, Dr. Donnell and Dr. Lala. This was a great discussion. I think we've talked a lot about Mpox, prevention, diagnosis, treatment, taking care of yourself, staying safe, and making sure your family and your contacts are safe as well. I look forward to further discussions on different topics with you in the future.
Stony Brook Medicine is Long Island's premier academic medical center. We transform lives through scientific discovery, education, and care, and we bring together innovative research, advanced education, and extraordinary healthcare expertise to set the standard for how healthy communities thrive. For more information, visit stonybrookmedicine.edu or follow us on social media, Stony Brook Medicine on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn, and Stony Brook Med on X.